Welcome to the Michigan Opportunity, an economic development podcast featuring candid conversations with business leaders across Michigan. You'll hear firsthand accounts from Michigan business leaders and innovators about how the state is driving job growth and business investment, supporting a thriving entrepreneurial ecosystem, building vibrant communities, and helping to attract and retain one of the most diverse and significant workforces in the nation.
Hello, I'm Ed Clementi, your host, and we're fortunate to have Thomas Schoelke with us. He's the president of Fraunhofer USA, Inc. Welcome to the show, Thomas.
Yeah, hello, Ed. Thanks for having me.
No, I found out about you, and I might as well give a plug, was from Tom Alley out of Automation Alley. Sorry, not Tom Alley, Tom Kelly out of Automation Alley. But he talks so highly about your organization and about you that we had to get you on the show. And why don't you kind of tell people what Fraunhofer is first?
Yeah, thanks. So Fraunhofer is a, you know, it's a non-for-profit research organization. So it originates from Germany. It was founded in 1949, and it has since grown quite substantially, you know, from an initial single institute. It's now something like 76 research institutes in Germany. It's got like 30,000 people, 3 billion in research expenditures, and it's present in 80 countries. And it's a U.S. affiliate. Fraunhofer USA Inc., as you introduced us, is the largest and the oldest affiliate of Fraunhofer. And that's in a foreign country. And yeah, it's going to turn 30 years old in 2024.
The USA one is going to be turning.
The USA one, yeah.
We were the very first country that they did it with, you said.
That's right.
In terms of
an affiliate, yes. So you have some different forms of engagement in different countries. And meaning, you know, you have in some countries, you might have a sales office or something like that, or a representative office. Whereas if you have an affiliate, it's really an independent corporation in that particular country. And the United States one was the first one and is the oldest one and also the largest one of those affiliates. And that's what we have here in the U.S. And it was incorporated originally in Rhode Island, but it's headquartered in Michigan since the beginning.
And I mean, this sounds naive and I should have asked you this, but does Fraunhofer like a city or does it mean something?
Oh, well, that is a very interesting question. Fraunhofer is actually a name.
Oh, and a person. Okay.
It's a person and it's very cool. You know, like it's named, the organization is named after Joseph von Fraunhofer. He was a Bavarian, and he like combined in one person the spirit of a scientist and of an entrepreneur. So what he did is he basically developed methods to produce glass lenses for telescopes. And on the scientific side, there's something called the Fraunhofer lines. You know, these are spectroscopic absorption lines in the sun spectrum. And, you know, in order to better analyze them and better evaluate them, he then actually developed these production methods and then ultimately founded a company to produce this. And that's the idea behind Fraunhofer, you know, it's an applied research organization. So everything Fraunhofer does has to serve some kind of a practical purpose. And, you know, I like to quote one of the sentences of Joseph von Fraunhofer, that's like he said, "I have to set aside everything in my scientific endeavors which does not further the product." And so that's a key of Fraunhofer, as opposed to somebody who does only basic research or somebody who improves an already existing manufacturing process that's way out there. So Fraunhofer is always somewhere in the middle of the technology readiness level equation. And as such, it has a very unique, you know, place in Germany. And if it were a U.S. company from the beginning, it would not have been Fraunhofer, because, you know, few people know him. It would have been Edison, which kind of represents the same idea. And that's why I like you know, the Henry Ford exhibition with the Edison Laboratory. That's like right up, you know, what Fraunhofer is doing.
And I mean, it's obviously an all sort of altruistic too, in that it's sort of not that it's doing pure benevolency, but it's doing something very unique that other organizations don't do. But can you explain a little bit how that works, the process?
Yeah, it is. That's true. It's like, for example, in terms of how you control it, you always have to look out. If you look at the research expenditures, for example, Fraunhofer is funded in a one-third type of a scheme. So one-third is some unencumbered base funding that comes from the government. So that gives you the opportunity to look at, you know, internal research and look at new things and do investments in equipment, for example, which is often industrial equipment. And then and the other two-thirds are contract research, of which half comes from the government, also could be any competitive government funding, and the other half from industry. And if you think about it, that's almost $1 billion in research at Fraunhofer that's just done with companies and you know, from very small ones all the way to the big ones. And that's the money side of it, and how you can steer. You know, Fraunhofer will always try to keep that balance, and that makes it unique. From the topics, what you choose to do is you would basically have to. I mean, 3 billion sounds maybe a lot, but that's a budget of a common university. So you have to limit what you're doing. So you look at you know, what are the societal needs, you know, like whatever you need, affordable healthcare, you need, you know, security, resilience, those type of things that are also worldwide problems. That's why it makes sense to be, you know, worldwide present. And then you tailor your research fields into certain categories that can provide potentially answers in those kind of needs or in those kind of or for those kind of impact goals. And then you do your research, and then you work with companies, because in the end, who's going to make the impact? It's not the researcher who's going to make the impact. It's a product that a company develops. And so Fraunhofer then works with those companies to bring these things, you know, as fast as possible from, you know, from the laboratory to the market, if you will. And at the same time, if you have a Fraunhofer laboratory like the ones we have in Michigan, they're equipped with industrial equipment. So a company can come and look at these machines and try them out and decide, oh, yeah, this is the right thing for me. That's what I want to have. So I do the investment with, and they can try it in real life, so to speak. And that makes the Fraunhofer approach unique for many companies.
So, for example, let's just make up a company, but say you're a company that was somehow doing something in the mobility sector for engines or something like that. Would they approach you to set up this sort of three-way kind of split thing, or how do they reach you and find you?
The company doesn't really worry about the three-way split, but yes.
Oh, okay.
I mean, like, for example, We are here in Michigan. There's a reason for that. When Fraunhofer first started in the United States, they came to the Midwest region. Why? Because it's automotive manufacturing, it's production technology. That's where they are big. I mean, Fraunhofer, with 76 institutes, they are covering a lot, from energy to health to IT to production to surfaces, materials, all of that kind of thing. But in the U.S., it was just a natural move. There's General Motors, Ford, Chrysler at the time, and that's where we work. And companies hear about us, they come to us with a specific problem. Let's say, for example, you know, friction in a mechanical assembly, which could be a machine or an engine. And can you do something about it? Because you have a laboratory that does surface engineering. And yes, so we would start a project with a company, would be proprietary, so confidential, and we would work with them. At the same time, we might have a R&D program with the Department of Energy that would be the public side of funding, where we work on ultra durable surfaces, for example, which we've done in the past with, I believe it was EERE, some energy department component. And we collaborate with with other research organizations. In that case, it was Argonne National Lab, for example, where we develop an extremely durable surface. And that then gets published somewhere. And then comes a company and says, hey, we read about your stuff. Would that work for my particular problem? And then we try to adapt it and make it work for that particular client.
So do the best practices from around the world, then you could bring those to the table sometimes to help people, even if it's not maybe specifically for your niche in Michigan, but there's other places around the world that could also help with your other.
That is actually a very acute observation. Yes, you have a big misfit between the capacities that are available in Germany, you know, 30,000 people, and then our little Fraunhofer USA with, you know, we have a little bit more than 100 people, but they are split over three states. And about half of that is in Michigan. And so we work with our German colleagues and try to find the best solution and the quickest solution for our customers here in the United States. Yeah.
And you did mention two other states. I think you told me they're both on the East Coast, I think, right?
Yeah, one is Massachusetts, and we have a laboratory in Boston, and then the other one is Maryland. So we have a couple of competences here in the U.S. In Michigan, it's, you know, heavy-duty manufacturing, lasers, additive manufacturing, and, you know, we have surface engineering. I mentioned that we do materials, semiconductor electronics at the laboratories that are located at Michigan State University. And in Boston, we do automation, lots of automation. Energy research is being done there, also some medical devices. And software is done in Maryland. And they focus on AI and how to combine AI with manufacturing. So all in all, we can bring those things together. I always joke around and say, you know, we developed the materials in Michigan and then we built the machine for it in Boston and the software comes from Maryland.
You're listening to the Michigan Opportunity, featuring candid conversations with Michigan business leaders on what makes Michigan a leading state to live, work, and play. Listen to more episodes at michiganbusiness.org/podcast.
I should have mentioned that you're also, are you a full professor at MSU or are you a visiting professor? I didn't know what your official.
Yeah, no, I'm a full professor at Michigan State University in the Department of Electrical and Computer Engineering. And I was there full-time employed when I ran the center at Michigan State. And now I'm, as a president, I'm 80% Fraunhofer employee and 20% Michigan State employee.
Do you do classes still or no?
Yes, I do every so often for graduate students. And those classes are basically, you know, applied plasma physics for applications, you know, ranging from, you know, surface engineering to energy to all kinds of different things where you can use modified surfaces.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, it's sort of interesting, too, that you work with the national labs and sort of whenever I get people on the show like you that do both applied and basic research, right? You're sort of you evolve with both somewhat, I'm guessing, right?
Well, you need how do you bring if you want to bring stuff to market, you know, cross that gap on the left side, you got to collaborate with, you know, with universities. That's why we're actually on campus. So when I came here, I mean, I was used to that from Fraunhofer in Germany, and we did try to find a proper partner, a proper university partner that does a PhD level research in the laboratories. And at Michigan State, we found that. So at any given point in time, we employ probably at least 20, you know, undergraduate students in our laboratories. We fund a couple of PhD theses there. So you need that interaction with the ongoing basic research in order to connect it with the real world.
That's really fast. I know. I mean, to me, that's very fascinating. But I'm not like most people, I think. But I find that so helpful, like things in tech transfer and, you know, all those kind of things, how that really helps innovation for the country. Well, and for everybody, right?
Yeah, that I mean, that's the goal, but it's also interesting for, I mean, imagine you're a student in our laboratories, you get thrown into the pool as if you're an engineer and now go work. And for a real customer, maybe a company, maybe it's General Motors or anybody. And, you know, for an engineer or scientist like myself, it's very, very interesting because you have on the one end your basic know-how in, let's say, vacuum processes, semiconductor processes, whatever, but you get to apply your knowledge to anything from biomedical implants to, you know, electronics to cars or whatever, wherever it's needed. So it's never gets boring in front of laboratories.
I would imagine even too, the advantage of having students is they look at things because maybe they don't have the baggage that I have, you know, that they look at it very differently than maybe, and that must make it a little bit more exciting that they come at it from a different angle maybe sometimes.
That's right. I always say, you know, the advantage of a student is they don't know yet that it doesn't work. That's why they get it to work.
And so is there any other partners you work with? I know you probably have some companies and other organizations, I'm sure. Because that's how I met you originally, like I said, with Automation Alley. But
Automation Alley is a very strong and also very interesting partner for us because they are connected to more than 1,000 local manufacturing companies. And they have a focus on Industry 4.0. And Industry 4.0 is something that actually originates out of Fraunhofer. The whole terminology and the concepts formulated around that. And because of that, we really like the setup of Automation Alley. It complements us quite well. And so we try to do what we can. And that's why Tom Kelly, whom you mentioned before, also serves on Fraunhofer USA's Science and Technology Advisory Council. And we do this kind of thing to have people looking at our operations from the outside. You know, if you are in your own soup bowl, so to speak, day in, day out, you need people to look at it from the outside and say, hey, you know what, guys, have you ever thought about this? Or we do it like that. And so we really appreciate that kind of insight. And we have, you know, I think maybe 12 people or so on this council, and there is national lab people are there. There are people from energy companies, former CEO of BMW Manufacturing South Carolina is on there. So there, that's a really interesting way of interacting with, you know, local entities. And I think also, you know, the key or one of the really critical elements of Fraunhofer USA's success is the partner universities that we have, because every laboratory is really tightly connected to a major research university. Here it's MSU, then Boston University and University of Maryland.
So you probably have explained this somewhat in some of your answers already, but is there any sort of future other trends you think people should be aware of? Because obviously it's an evolving field all the time. But
yeah, I mean, you know, okay, so every few years some new trends come up. But like, I mean, right now it's a lot of lots of talking about AI, you know, like artificial intelligence. And our view on the thing is, you know, essentially – human intelligence is predicting, you know, what's next, and AI does that too. And meanwhile, the computational power is there that well-trained AI can do things that humans might not even be easily able to do. And no matter what we think, this is not a fad. It'll stay. And what we try to do is make the best use of it that we can for the processes we are developing. So I find that very interesting. And, you know, of course, risks and so on, everything needs rules, you know, and yes, there will be rules and there will be behavioral rules, what you can and can't do with it. There will be technical rules. That's all fine, but it won't go away.
Yeah, you know, I almost think of AI sometimes almost as like augmented sort of versus, say, virtual reality, because it's more like an assistant that might know more than you, but the assistant is still an assistant, and yeah, you absolutely sort of control that.
Absolutely. And it's sometimes astoundingly powerful. And I'm not talking about ChatGPT or something. I'm talking about, let's say, predicting a manufacturing process. We grow diamonds at Michigan State for semiconductor purposes. And we have worked with AI algorithms to see if the crystal that comes out looks great. And that works quite nicely. And we have just filed a patent on that. But that's something where I see a lot of potential, you know, where we would have had traditionally difficulties to monitor those type of processes.
Yeah. And, you know, also, you know, as this field evolves, I've seen it growing actually from like what I've talked to some other people is mainly not in your field as much as biology. Like there's a lot of things I know they're doing in health research that humans couldn't have done if they, you know, tried to find out how to, you know, process like of elimination or deductive reasoning. It goes a lot faster with AI than humans trying to go through every experiment kind of.
Yeah. And I like your comment that it's, you know, it's a tool. You know, just like the automobile was a tool that made you go from A to B faster, AI is a tool and it will help a lot.
Well, your last couple of questions are a little easier, Thomas. Again, our guest is Thomas Schulke. He's the president of Fraunhofer USA, Inc. So what would you tell your 17-year-old self? Because how long have you been here in America? I didn't even think about that. But have you been here quite a while, right?
Yeah, I came to the United States in 98, so it's quite a while.
So I know. So you were a student, though, in Germany when you were 17, I presume.
Right.
So what would you go back and tell yourself to do for a career?
Well, in terms of a career, I would do exactly the same. I mean, when I was 17, I knew I wanted to become a physicist, and I would do the same thing again, just simply because it's so interesting. Now, when I was 17, as a student, I was in East Germany. What I didn't know is that the wall would disappear and that the world suddenly would become a very interesting place.
So wait, you were, you came here before the wall or after the wall fell?
After the wall. The wall disappeared when I was at university.
Oh, interesting. So you were going to school somewhere in East Germany back then.
That's right. Yeah, I was born and grew up in the city of Berlin.
Oh, on the east side. Yeah. Oh, wow. Interesting. I didn't know that. That's pretty. I would probably talk to you just about that for a whole show, but that would probably be another time. So that must have been very interesting for you to come here to America too. Just in general, not even going to Germany, West Germany, but coming to the U.S. then.
Yeah, I mean, when I first came to the U.S., it was just for an experiment. I had a friend at Lawrence Berkeley Lab in 95. I went there for 3 months because we wanted to photograph some plasmas, and I really enjoyed it. I really liked it. And eventually it led me back to the United States, 3 years later already.
Well, and your last question, because I know both you and I share a passion for the Henry Ford Museum and Greenfield Village, but what else do you like doing in Michigan too? Anything else with your family or?
Yeah, well, I mean, my hobby is motorcycling. I like to ride around on my motorcycle here in Michigan, up and down the state, left and right. And, you know, on a motorcycle, every state becomes small. But yeah, Michigan is it's just a cool state. What people don't realize is that it's actually on an elevation of about 900 feet or so, and it's a flat plain with a lot of lakes. But because it's on an elevation, once in a while it gets deep down, and you get even curvy roads in Michigan. You just have to find them, and that's my mission in my free time.
You sound like someone who wants the Autobahn. So I don't know what the speed limit is there, but everyone always jokes that it sometimes doesn't have a speed limit. So I don't know if it does.
Well, it doesn't.
No, it doesn't. Okay. I wasn't sure.
Not everywhere. But it's also, well, be careful.
Yeah.
But be careful what you wish for.
Yeah. I would imagine. Well, anyway, once again, our guest was Thomas Schulke. He's the president at Fraunhofer USA Inc. here in Plymouth, Michigan. And thanks again. And it sounds like you guys are doing a fantastic job there, and keep up the good work. Thanks for doing this today, Thomas.
Yeah, thank you, Ed, for the opportunity. I appreciate it.
Oh, it was a good conversation. I appreciate it as well.
The Michigan Opportunity is brought to you by the Michigan Economic Development Corporation. Join us and make your mark where it matters. Visit michiganbusiness.org/radio to put your plans in motion.